Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast. My guest today is in for her second episode. This is Alyssa Day, who is a killer, killer guitar player, one of the best out there, and a really, really cool person. Before you listen to this, I suggest you go check out her new music video called Trundle. You will not regret it, and then everything we're about to talk about will make a lot more sense. So pause this. Go watch Trundle and then come back, and then we'll get right into it. Here goes. Welcome back, Alyssa.
Thanks, man. I'm honored to be back so soon.
Yeah. Well, I saw the video you put out and was like, you know, I really enjoyed the last episode. This video's worth talking about. And I know that you also just recovered from a pretty bad guitar-related injury. So kind of wanted to follow up and find out about that. But first of all, puppies.
Yeah, puppies are definitely the most important thing in this conversation.
Yeah, that's why I want to lead with what matters most.
Of course, of course. Well, first of all, do you have any questions about the puppies or anything like that?
Oh, I just wanted to say puppies.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were aware of the whole charity aspect.
No, yeah. So I thought that was really, really cool. I'll let you explain exactly what it is, but what we're talking about is Alyssa's new music video, which is one of the coolest videos I've ever seen because there's puppies in it, a whole lot of them. I guess the thing I was mostly wondering before you talk about that is, were you there?
Yes, and it was the most fulfilling, rewarding experience of my life. It was amazing. Yeah,
I really, really like their MMA match at the end.
Yeah, when they're on the marble table, mm-hmm. and they're
and there basically was the whole chasing each other's tails.
Yeah, that was absolute gold. I'm really happy we captured that moment. And there were so many golden moments that we were luckily able to capture. But honestly, a lot of the credit goes to the very intelligent planning done by the director and the co-director as well. They really knew what they were doing, even though this was a situation and scenario that no one has ever done before. So they came into it in a really wise, methodical way. And luckily, we were able to set the stage in just the absolute perfect way to be able to capture these moments.
What was your thinking behind it, like when putting it together?
Yeah, so obviously it started with the audio component and the music.
Which is cool, too.
Thanks, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
I totally expect and hoped that the puppies would overshadow the music to some extent. That's not a bad problem to have, in my opinion. But so I had this song, and obviously it was a very serious metal song. You know, there's nothing really whimsical about that song until you get into like the Wham automations and things like that. Maybe that's a little bit playful. But overall, the takeaway from that song musically was a bit serious, in my opinion, and heavy. And so I was thinking, I knew I wanted this one to be the single of the EP, and I wanted to lead with this one. But I was thinking, like, I'm a pretty serious person at times, but I'm not all that serious. I don't want to be perceived as though I'm just like this very intense person, and that's all there is to my personality. And there's like a very soft side of me that I feel like the world doesn't know because of the nature of the music that I play. And so I was just thinking to myself, how can I incorporate some sort of whimsy and levity and fun and compassion too at the same time in this project? I really wanted it to, I want to find a way to really show who I am and express who I am through all these mediums that I have available, you know, music, video, all those things. And so the idea just came about because I was actually talking with someone at the time, and we were just like, you know, what if the music video was just like kittens and puppies? And like, you know, that's pretty sick and funny and stupid at the same time. And so I was just like, that got my wheels turning, and I was like, puppies. And
puppies, yeah. No kittens.
Not kittens. I'm far more a dog person. I've always had such a soft spot in my heart for dogs. I don't know why.
Because they're cooler.
That's true. I do know why. But yeah.
So they're great.
They're really like the most marvelous little creatures ever. So I just got thinking. I was like, this idea sort of sprung up in my head just from that conversation. And I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool if there was like this, in my head, it was called like the Great Puppy War. And I was thinking like, what if there was this big battle between puppies, and we framed it so that it was all cinematic and just, it seems so high budget and so well thought out and orchestrated. But then when it comes time for the battle, they're just like licking each other and scratching and like doing cute puppy shit. And so that was like the original idea in my head. And I was like, okay, who the fuck is going to be able to pull this off? And so I contacted someone who wasn't able to do it. And then I contacted someone who knew someone. I basically just reached out to everyone that I could to see, like, if someone could possibly pull this off, and not for, like, you know, $100,000, because, you know, I'm self-funding this at the same time. So I was
like, it looks like $100,000.
Thank you. And that was, I can get into the whole backstory of all this, but I was quoted something close to that number at first. And then I just like started crying. I was like, no, it's not going to happen. I can't do it. But then luckily it all worked out, which again is a huge testament to the creativity and the cleverness and the kind-hearted nature of the director and co-director, because they really were willing to go above and beyond for this. So I reached out, found this director. His name is Erez Bader, and he was so down with the idea, and he just happens to be a phenomenal director and human being. And I told him my idea, and he was like, I got this. And then he reached out to his friend named Nathan, who's in like the documentary world, and they came up with the like sort of Shakespearean dialogue like within a matter of probably an hour. Like, it just flowed right out of them. And so it all came together in such a magical way. And then I was like, I knew I wanted from the start, I wanted there to be a charity component, because I was just like, let's just check off all the boxes of everything I've ever wanted to do with a release. Mm-hmm. And so we found, actually Erez found the shelter near him. It was this organization, this nonprofit that rescues puppies and, you know, cats and dogs of all ages, but primarily the younger ones who get put into these high rate kill shelters. And they basically take them from the shelters, and then they have this whole like database of foster parents that they mm-hmm. can reach out to, and they supply them, you know, with medical funds for whatever needs to be done to fix any ailments or get them vaccines or anything like that. And so they're all donation based, but I just really loved what they were doing. And so I just really wanted to help them out in some way. And you know, I donated a portion of the music video budget to them as well. But then I was like, you know, it would just be so amazing if we could do something like have a community-based event or reason to sort of, you know, give to this cause. And so, yeah, maybe I'll stop there for now. I don't know how much of that is rambling on how much.
No, it seems like all pertinent details. It seems to me like the kind of project too, where people would be willing to forego what would normally be their full rate just because everybody actually cares about the good side of it. I guess not that there's a bad side, but like the good end result, and the charity of it all. I think that's pretty great. There's like side benefits too. I think, like, for instance, which I think is really genius, is finding a way to make an instrumental guitar shred video interesting to someone who might not be into that. Because, you know, I mean, I realize we're talking about something that is, I guess, more important than shred, like life and death. But there's multiple angles to it, and I feel like shred guitar music and videos and just instrumental stuff can be kind of boring to a lot of people,
of course,
including me. But I actually think that the song itself is really cool, but a lot of people who are not into that kind of stuff might just not even give it a chance. And I think that puppies are kind of like the great equalizer.
They are the great
everyone
equalizer.
Will give it a chance. Yeah, everyone will give it a chance because of that, which is great.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. It just that was sort of like an emergent property of the idea in and of itself. There are all of these side benefits that's why this whole thing just was so fulfilling and rewarding, because it felt like it ticked all of the boxes and then some.
Yep.
And yeah, I do agree that the world of instrumental music, especially like the shred guitar sort of niche, it is, I don't know, it's stagnating a bit.
Plateauing.
There's plateauing I just feel like everything has sort of become a bit homogenized and a little monotonous for whatever reason. And there are lots of reasons for which I think, yeah, or to which you can attribute that. But yeah, I did really want to do something that stood out in that way. And I hope I can continue to do that, although it'll be hard to top puppies. But I think the world of instrumental music, you know, just needs some life injected into it and some excitement, and to not take oneself so seriously, and to, I don't know, not that I'm the pinnacle of that by any means. I still have so much more that I want to do and, you know, expand in that way. But yeah, this was just my attempt to sort of bring levity and compassion at the same time, and whimsy in some sense, and also still write some heavy ass shit, you know? Like,
yeah, I love that it does check off all the boxes, because lots of times when you get stuff for charity, the it sucks. So yeah. That's why I it's hard, because you want to support something, but lots of times you have to support it because the cause, you know, people's heart is in the right place, but what they're doing to support this cause sucks. It's not very often that, yeah, you get a really cool piece of art, all around music and video, supporting a really worthwhile cause that isn't going to piss off half of everybody, or isn't like corrupt or whatever, like everything about it's good. That's not very common, actually. It's actually very uncommon.
Oh, man. Well, that's cool that that's your take on the outcome of this.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk to you about it because it's just not normal. You see a lot of people doing benefit for this, benefit for that, or show for this, or this song is dedicated to the victims of that. And it's almost always contrived. Like, the song wasn't about that, but this thing happened, and these people are going to try to cash in on people's emotions. Or the song is written with this cause in mind, and they put the cause ahead of the music. There's like all these different reasons, or they get involved with some organization that the owners keep half the money for themselves. Like, there's all these things. When you see something where like the art is genuine, the intent is genuine, like the quality of everything is super high, like I feel like it's got to be highlighted. And I also love puppies, so I wanted to talk about that. But you know, like when I saw that, I decided to go back through some of your other music videos. And I think performance videos are just fine too if they're badass. Like, there's, you were just saying that you don't know how you'll top it, but I feel like it's worth doing, in my opinion, a video like that when you have the idea for it. Like, yeah. You know, Arcspire videos are awesome.
Yeah.
I was talking to them about this the other day, but if you don't have an idea that's that good, a badass performance video will do better than a half-assed idea video.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what I resolved myself to do in this instance. I was like, I'm not doing another performance video. I just wasn't as great as a job that the previous director and editor did. I just wasn't happy with the lack of a concept for my last music video. And I just felt as though I dropped a few balls that I was juggling at the time. And I didn't, there wasn't enough like premeditation in terms of, you know, like if you're going to invest so much time and effort and money and, you know, emotion into something, you know, really give it your all. Don't just think like, people will tune in just because I'm playing guitar and just because they should. There's like a selfish aspect of that. It would be, exactly. Yeah. It would be great if like people just thought you were the shit and, you know, like just gave you their time and their money.
And here I am.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, no, you have to show up for it. And I really feel that. Like, I feel this fire in me, especially after the injury, where I didn't know if I was going to be able to play guitar again for a little bit. There's just like an intense sort of motivation that I feel to like not squander anything that I have, because it's just, you know, it's a cliche. Once you realize how fragile life is and you realize, you know, maybe my priorities weren't in the right place, maybe I wasn't trying hard enough, and maybe I wasn't trying in the right ways, it really does put it into perspective and make you like, I don't know, I'm lucky that it lit a fire in me instead of sort of like crushing my spirit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that was a big, it was extremely stressful, don't get me wrong, when I was going through it, but I actually am sort of grateful for that experience in hindsight, because it really just snapped my brain into like the proper place, I think, if that makes sense.
It does. It's interesting how different people will take the same event and come to completely different conclusions in their mind off of it. Like, whereas it is very, very possible that an injury like that, and we should probably fill people in on what happened, because last time, if they go back and listen to your previous episode, you had, if I remember correctly, you hadn't quite figured out, it was starting to bother you. and you were getting ready for that tour, but you hadn't quite figured it out. Cause I remember you hitting me up like a week later telling me about that. And then, you know, one thing led to another, but, you know, having had injuries myself and knowing like everyone I know who plays guitar in heavy music has dealt with injuries at some point. And it's really, really interesting to see how people deal with them because yes, for some people it's, they can't overcome the mental side of it. Like it just crushes them. And with other people, it motivates them. And I've always been fascinated by why that is. And I feel like there's some element of luck of the draw, if what kind of person you are. It's all this stuff that has just pre-wired or has to do with your upbringing, but it's really, really fascinating to me because I've seen it go both ways, which makes me think that the event itself is neutral.
Yes. I mean,
getting injured sucks, of course, but what it ends up becoming is kind of up to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I've realized that everything in life, you can only control how it affects you, and it's all about your framing and the lens through which you view something, and that greatly determines the result of that event and how it affects you. But
yeah, so what happened?
The injury itself?
Yeah. What happened?
Yeah, so as you said a moment ago, there was something physically bothering me for a really long time. It gradually escalated for probably like 8-9 months, something like that. And I just couldn't figure out why my hands were continually diminishing in strength, stamina, mobility, everything. Like I just felt like I was getting worse and worse, and it became harder and harder to practice. I think I said it on the last podcast with you. I thought it was tendonitis.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like it, right? And then, essentially, I was so overloaded with musical obligations that I was playing and playing and playing and trying to push through it, and everything just snapped one day. Everything, like the levee broke, and all of a sudden I couldn't hold even a glass of water. I couldn't I couldn't move my fingers like this without, you know, 9 out of 10 shooting pain up both arms. And I essentially was useless. my arms were basically totally useless. And so there was, I think I texted you or whatever, messaged you somehow, maybe that day. I was reaching out to a lot of people, getting their opinions on what I should do, because I was like, I have this tour
coming up.
Yeah. I had a tour coming up in like a week and a half or something, like less than 2 weeks out. And all of a sudden, I couldn't touch my fingers to the fretboard. I just couldn't do it. And I was like, well, fuck. I'm going to try to figure this out. But honestly, they need to figure out what they need to do if I can't perform. And it felt wrong to me to try to sort of selfishly in some way try to force my way into that tour and into that situation while I was in a very unreliable state.
Yep.
And you gave me, I remember you sort of spoke that wisdom to me as well, and everybody else did too. Everybody, it was a resounding like, figure your shit out and let them figure theirs out sort of a thing. And
don't take CBD.
Don't take CBD.
Well, I mean, you can take it, but it's not going to... Don't it's listen not... to people who say, just do CBD, man.
Oh, just CBD? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. CBD fixes everything. immediately thereafter, I went to some specialists. I went to an orthopedic specialist, and I told them my symptoms, and I said, I think I have really bad tendonitis. Can you just like give me steroid injections or something so I can go on this tour and just tell me everything's going to be okay? And they were like, no, actually, they actually did end up giving me like steroids to take. But and I tried it and I was like, this literally did nothing. But I was so desperate to try anything because I really didn't want to let, you know, that band down. They trusted me to fulfill a role. And I was so eager to prove that I was able to do that. And then, so I was a little desperate and willing to do pretty much anything to try to fix it. And the orthopedic specialist said, it sounds like what you have is nerve damage, not tendonitis. So we're going to do an x-ray of your spine. And they did an x-ray of it. And they really weren't. The orthopedic specialist was not very helpful whatsoever. They took an x-ray and they were like, yeah, your neck, it's not good. It's not, it's supposed to have a curve there. You don't have a curve. So maybe surgery will fix that. The recovery time can take up to 10 years. And I was like, thanks, dude. Thanks. Yes, exactly what I wanted to hear. And
second
I was
opinion.
Like, oh, yeah. I was like, I mean, I was an absolute wreck. I was like, that just can't be. I'm going somewhere else. And then I went to a chiropractor, which I'm a very data-driven person. And they're, you know, I lumped chiropractic treatments in with like people who talk about ayahuasca and breath work and shit. And I was just like, there's no evidence to support this works and da da da. And so, but I was like, again, desperate. So I'm going to go. And they did a whole like diagnostic thing, x-rays again and all this stuff. And then they came back to me with actual tangible data and numbers. And they said, your spine is supposed to be 42 degrees or 41 degrees or something like that. Or your cervical spine, the neck part of your spine, is supposed to have that much curvature to it. And you have 7 degrees. And so you're basically like, you're like, you have the spine of a postmenopausal like 70-year-old woman, and you're about to have disc fusion if you don't do something to correct it. And you certainly have like some pinching and nerve compression going on there. And so I was like, well, shit, okay. At least there's an answer there. So I actually left with some hope. And after the first adjustment, it was sort of miraculous, or it felt miraculous, because they just, you know, did something to alleviate that pressure momentarily. And all of a sudden, for the first time in like a week or 2 weeks, I didn't have that shooting pain. And I was able to like move my fingers without intense repercussions. And so I was like, oh my God. And, you know, it was a really intense week or two before that, before I got that feeling of relief. Cause I was just like, I thought it was never gonna go away. I was like, this is so intense. I basically had to do 3 times a week chiropractic treatments, and I had to start getting massages because my muscles were so tense, just so tense that everything was pulling my spine back into this compressed state. So speaking of CBD, I actually had medical professionals tell me that I needed to chill the fuck out and smoke weed. And
I'm sure like, there is something to be said for chilling out.
Sure. Yeah, there's a whole mental component to it, too. that maybe we could get into. Anyway, I'm sorry, this is turning into a very drawn out story, but
I find this interesting because I've dealt with injuries and recovery. And like I said, every single person who plays guitar seriously and heavy music has dealt or will deal with some version of this. And it's a question that comes up all the time in the Riff Hard community.
Really?
It's just always. Yeah. It's at least once a week it comes up.
Wow.
So yeah, this is a very universal thing among metal guitar players. So I think it's interesting to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, honestly, it is. It's horrible to hear that people deal with this so much. I would not wish that on anyone. That it was brought to my attention that it was a more prominent issue than I had previously realized. And just through comments after that post, or on that post that I made, that video, just saying that I couldn't make the tour. And a lot of people were like, oh yeah, I have, you know, disc fusion in my C4 and C5 and da, da, da. And I haven't been able to play guitar in 10 years. And it was kind of crushing. I mean, it was crushing to hear that. I mean, it's wild that something so life-altering and life-changing is so common, and yet we don't discuss it that often. Because I wish I had known that other people went through this sort of stuff while I was going through it. So I don't know, maybe just, you know, this happening to me was a good catalyst to sort of start talking about it more publicly. Yeah, for some people.
I think for sure. But so that said, I want to hear more about how the recovery happened. So you went to a chiropractor, even though you were not convinced about them, and they actually helped. So you started getting 3 times a week chiropractic treatment, as well as massages, as well as a stern recommendation to chill the fuck out at whatever means necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
And then?
Yeah. So in addition to the whole chiropractic treatment regimen, I did have to work on the mental side of things as well, because of the tension and the physical manifestations that sort of brought about. So there was a lot of like self-reflection and prioritization, and just, you know, realizing that we talked about this on the last podcast too, just the amount of self-criticism that I had was actually affecting me in a non-trivial physical way. But I just had this mentality like, oh, don't be a little bitch. Like, come on, you know, you could do better. You know, you can be better, and you deserve this. You deserve like the self-criticism and all this stuff. So I had like a very hardcore mentality before. And I've absolutely chilled on that. And that really was the hardest thing to work on, because to see a chiropractor, yeah, it hurts to pay that much for something. That was a lot of money. But yeah, you just go, you lay on a table and they crack your neck. Like, you don't really have to do that much for that. And then like the painful moments of introspection and, you know, realizing that you had not comported yourself in an optimal way, in a way that you were so committed to being because you identified with that mentality. That was a bit harder. So, yeah. And then it was a slow recovery. It was gradual. Throw into the mix that, I was asked to be the guitarist for the Iron Maidens at the time too, and I had a show coming up with them in early December, and all of this happened in early October. And I was like, I gotta try to make that. I got it. So I was like learning 90 minutes of Iron Maiden material slowly. And luckily that's easy enough. Mm-hmm. That I just was like, okay, I'm gonna try to play a power chord next week. So it started off, I could play. The first time I picked up the guitar after I started to feel better from the chiropractic treatments, I was able to play something like 6 minutes before my hand completely gave out. But I was like, okay, that's 6 minutes. You
six
know?
Minutes more than zero.
Exactly. I was like, I couldn't have fathomed fretting one note a week ago. So this is actually really great. And so, you know, I took a couple days off, tried a little bit later. And then it turned into, you know, 10 minutes. And then it turned into 15 minutes. And then it stagnated somewhere around there. And then it turned into 30 minutes. And now, fast forward to however many months later this is, we're recording this in, what month is it? March? It's,
good question. March April. 26th, 2024.
Yeah. Now, I can play as much as I want, but I practice in a very mindful, careful way now. But I can play hours a day again, which, like, sometimes, you know, after those long practice sessions and I feel better than I've ever felt playing wise, I'm just like, holy shit. Like, you know, it was not that long ago that I couldn't do anything. So it's like, it's really helped me to feel grateful about things that you take for granted well, in the past.
One thing I think is, and I'm not surprised by this, I'm glad you didn't have to get surgery or anything like that. But the thing that when this comes up, this type of thing, like a repetitive motion injury or, you know, something related to the different ways you can hurt yourself playing metal. The one thing that I think solves like 99%, not actually 99%, but like some high percentage of these cases is just to stop playing. And be patient. Basically, that's where people fuck up the most, is by just trying to play through it and then not being willing to allow themselves enough time to recover. So just hearing that you actually did take the time, and then when you got back into it, you were super gradual about it. Like, that's where I think so many people go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. If I had just dove headfirst into playing again, even after those like 2.5 weeks I took off, maybe it was closer to 3 weeks, honestly. The numbers are a little hazy. But if I had jumped right back into it, full blast, for sure, I would have hurt myself and set myself back and had to take probably more time off than those 2-3 weeks.
So it's like 3 weeks of like zero, and then like...
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. But,
no. So you couldn't do shit for like 3 weeks.
Not only could I not play guitar, my boyfriend had to do everything for me. I couldn't hold a fork. Like, I couldn't do anything. I mean, it's hard to describe how weird the pain was and how immobile my hands were. I know it sounds really dramatic and...
I mean, like, you kind of need your hands.
Yeah, you don't realize you can't do anything without your hands. And yeah, I mean, it was just insane. I couldn't believe. I was like, this is the most ironic shit you could possibly imagine. Yeah, so it wasn't just I couldn't play guitar, just to paint the picture.
Yeah, your whole life was compromised. And then once you started playing, how long did you take the gradual like easing back in period?
It's been gradual up to this day. And there was that pressure and urgency from like learning all those Iron Maiden songs to play those shows.
Did you play them?
I did.
All right, awesome.
It was one show in December. They were sort of like testing me out, which, you know, even more pressure. And then in, you know, February, they asked me to do more shows. I did a couple more shows with them. And I actually have to leave in like a couple days to do a few more with them. But yeah, that I had, it was very stressful. Like there were times where I was like, this is, I don't know how I'm going to learn all this stuff when I can only play, you know, 10 minutes a day. So I had to adopt some different tactics, which again, we talked about a little bit last time. And there's a lot of mental work that can be done to learn music, especially if you already have this rapport with your instrument to where you don't need to practice certain techniques and actually get the physical muscle memory. And luckily, that was the case for at least all the rhythm parts with those songs. It's just power chords and galloping. It's like I've been doing that forever. So that I just need to listen and remember, you know, the harmony and rhythms. But I was very careful with gradually increasing my physical playing time, but yeah, it was just very stressful, to be honest. It was hard. It was a hard thing to balance, and there was constant titration involved and listening to my hands and listening to, you know, what my body was saying. So I think everyone's a little bit different. There's nothing that I think one can prescribe in terms of a regimen to get back into playing after something so strange and nebulous happens to you. But yeah, so the only thing I can really say is just really take your time and don't push when you know. Like, you'll have a gut feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. So the other thing that I remember saying was, no one's going to hate you. Like, no one's going to question it. Like, they will hate you if you do the other thing, which is, like, don't say it. And then end up not being able to do it. That's a whole other thing, but my prediction was no one was gonna give you any shit for it if you just told them. So did you get any shit for it?
So I was so shocked at the overwhelming support and understanding and grace that people gave me, because again, in my mind, I was like, you said you were capable of doing something and you're not, and you let people down and you suck, sort of a thing. And I was like, no one's going to trust you again. No one's going to, you know, no one's going to ask you to do anything ever again. And but that did not happen whatsoever. Whatsoever. People were very,
I mean, had you not said anything, then maybe the "they won't trust you" dialogue would be appropriate. But
Luckily that did not happen, and in your wisdom has been proven once again, because you were definitely right.
No, I was just curious how it went with that, because I get that. I have a hard time saying no to things. I always have. Like, I'm programmed to say yes, and then it's just this whole mental thing with saying no to people. Like, the voices are just intense when I need to say no, and they just get louder and louder, and it's all that kind of stuff. And it's usually bullshit. What I've learned is it's usually bullshit. What the voices are saying, avoiding the conversation is what really causes the problems.
Accepting too much when you know that you're likely not going to be able to handle that. But I wonder what that is. It's probably childhood shit, right?
Yes, it's probably childhood shit. You know, making up for something that was missing then. But I think also it's a byproduct of coming up in music and going through years and years and years of where it would be stupid to say no to things. Like, you just have to say yes to opportunities and take as much as you can, because you're just trying to build something out of nothing. But then there comes a point where the momentum shifts. You now have your own momentum, and you need to start guarding your time wisely, because you can only do so many things. You have to pick the things that are the most bang for the buck, basically. But that doesn't mean that you can just mentally make that shift after years and years of saying yes to almost anything and like trying to take any opportunity. It's tough to make that shift, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting to know how to trust yourself and your judgment is a really difficult thing to do, especially in this industry as well. And yeah, I definitely can see, I saw it in myself and I can see it happening in a lot of people where they just roll with the what the world is giving to them in terms of like social media opportunities and things like that. And you can just sort of see everyone being pushed in a similar direction in terms of like the output creatively and yeah, just product wise. And it's really difficult to say no to things that seem like a certain way towards success or some semblance mm-hmm. of success. And I think it's a really tricky thing to navigate today because resources appear to be more scarce, and not only just monetarily, but, you know, attention wise, it's really difficult to capture people's attention. And that is sort of like the economy that we're in as musicians. And it definitely seems to incentivize and force people into taking a route where, one, they overwhelm themselves with tasks because we're so scared of losing out on success, and we're so scared of losing out on like the attention. And I guess just that is what leads to the success. But yeah, I think it's been very important to me to define what success is in my mind. And I have not reached it yet. Certainly, I'm not saying I have, but yeah, it's important to define those parameters of your life, but like really think about it and be very honest with yourself about what that is. And when you put things in very blunt terms, you realize sometimes you've been chasing things that are very specious and not long-term fulfilling. So, yeah.
You know, back to talking about the music video, I actually think that music video is a perfect example of something that does work. And I think that focusing on really good ideas will do more for you than adding 10,000 tasks just because you feel like you have to do them. Like, the power of one good thing is way more than a bunch of just task-based whatever things, cumulatively speaking.
Yeah. Yeah, I it's a titration process, but I found myself being overwhelmed with more trivial tasks, and then I don't have the bandwidth to do a big project like that. But it's very, it was not an easy decision. Every step of the way was very, very hard to justify the amount of effort I was putting into that video and that song. Because it seems like, again, like the self-doubt talk creeps in no matter what you're doing. You're like, are you really gonna like throw away a down payment on a house for a fucking music video? Are you insane? Are you gonna like, you saved for so long, that's like years and years of your life that you spent working to be able to do something, and
better be good.
It better be good. Yeah. And so there's that element of it, and then there's also like, you know, it's just really difficult to trust yourself to make big decisions like that. And that's why I'm just really happy that people seem to be receiving it well and they like it. And that, you know, we actually like did, we did save puppies in the process. Like,
yeah,
it's just,
it was so great.
Man, it's just, it was the coolest thing. And I really did, like, speaking of setting the parameters of success, like, that is what I want to do henceforth. I just want to find a way that there can be some sort of, you know, symbiotic relationship between, like, all the work that I put into something and then also that the second, third order effects be actually helping some people or some cause or some puppies in this case, but it's not always going to be puppies. No. I want it to be other things as
so,
well.
So out of curiosity, the risk involved there of taking money that you had that you wanted to put towards a quote unquote responsible investment as opposed to a risky one. Like, I feel like you kind of have to do that stuff, whether it's with your time or with opportunities you decide to take, which then make you have to say no to other things. Like, you have to do this stuff as an artist or an entrepreneur in order to get to the next level. But it's very, very risky. I mean, that's why it is called risky, because it could just... could go bad. It could go really, really bad. And there's a lot of people who have really, really fucked themselves up trying to invest in their art career or companies. So how did you come to the conclusion that you were making the right decision? Because I think you did. So, but I'm wondering how did you make that decision? Like, how did you round that corner, basically.
I never, throughout the whole process, knew if I was making the right decision or not as far as the outcome was concerned. The whole time, I was, like, terrified. I was like, oh, my God. You're gonna be one of those people that just, you know, was so delusional and, like, believed in yourself so much. And then you're going to be homeless and da 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 and no one's gonna like you and like all this. Basically, I was a wreck the whole time. And but I know that I can't live with myself without taking those risks, because then what? I buy a house and then I have a house, and then what? Like, who fucking cares? Like, then I'll just have a normal life and just wonder what I could have done that could have been special. So to me, it's like that strong urge, and it could just be delusion, but that strong urge is very profound in me, and it always has been. And I am naturally risk averse at heart. That's why there's all this self-doubt and, like, the, you know, negative talk, mental chatter, I guess you could say, that occurs throughout these processes. But I've always, like, taken the risk. You know, I had a 9-to-5 job and quit that. And I was like, it took me 3 days at that job to realize, like, I can't do this. This is not the life for me. And, you know, I actually, I left high school early to just change my surroundings because I knew what I wanted as my future. My life's a weird story. It's not normal, but we don't need to get into all of that. But basically, I've always, like, had this feeling like I need to do this. And it's not the quote-unquote wise responsible decision, but I just always felt the need to do it because I can picture two versions of my future, and one is where I took the risks and I made something that I was really proud of, or I played it safe and always wondered. And that's just all it comes down to, honestly.
Have you ever had an opportunity fall flat on his face? I have.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, I've taken the risk and fallen on my face. And it seemed like you were searching the database if it's happened.
The thing that I've come to realize that it's a framing thing. It's like, I think my first EP, that was like crushing when I, like the results of that, because I thought I could have done so much better and no one fucking listened to it. So like that to me, but you listened to it and mm-hmm. that's why, and people I really respect listened to it and said they enjoyed it and got something out of that listening experience. So in my mind, that was falling flat on my face at the time. I was really sad about that because, again, I invested so much. Like, to this day, it's still not, like, the amount I invested is not proportional to the outcome. So I guess you could say that was, it's not flat on my face. I fell, but maybe not flat on my face because there was some learning experience that I gleaned from that. And there's lessons that I gleaned from that, I guess I should have said, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. When it's happened to me, at the end of the day, it's really not that bad. It hasn't been that bad. Like, yeah, it's not how I wanted things to turn out, but there hasn't been a single one of those that, you know, it's fine. It's always fine.
It's always fine. Unless, you know, you give up. And I think I'm lucky to have, in my young years, like my childhood, I just grew up in a really bad spot and everyone had sort of given up around me. So I saw that outcome and, yeah, I was like, okay, that's what happens when you give up and I don't want that. So yeah, no matter what, I'm just going to try to get back up on my feet and not feel so sorry for myself. So, yeah, it's all just about, like we said earlier, it's just about your framing and whether or not you take a shitty experience or something that's very painful and stressful. And if you just sort of wallow in that or sound like fucking Gary Vee, dude, I don't know.
So, funny, he came up in a podcast. I did the Garza podcast and he was the first thing to come up.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not into Gary Vee. I think people misunderstood what I was saying about him. Even though I agree with some things he says, like I'm not really into coach culture, but the thing that we were talking about, which is kind of a off topic, but we're talking about how people like him, people that do like achieve like crazy shit, their persona is usually not an act. Like, so I know people who have worked with him and have known him. Dude is fucking like he is in the videos 24/7. It's an intense amount of energy and dedication, and he goes something like 16 hours a day like that. He also has like 30 people on his social media team. My point was just that, like, these people that achieve this crazy shit or who you know them for being a certain way, usually it's because that's actually the way that they are. And being that way is what allows them to do the crazy shit that they do. It's important for people to realize that you kind of got to be a little nuts, just a little nuts. So like, the bad upbringing and like weird life path, that's kind of actually normal for people that do cool stuff.
I've noticed that. Yeah. Again, that just sounds like such a cliche, but I have seen this sort of prove itself to be true. And that's not to say like you need a horrible childhood to do great things. You don't need it, but I have seen that trend.
You don't need it, but it helps.
It does kind of help, right?
It's weird, weirdly enough.
Yeah. And so that's why it's like now with everything that I go through, it takes me a minute sometimes for sure if I'm really feeling the stress of a situation, but I really do like find gratitude in that because I know, you know, I just know it's going to make me stronger in the long run. And I'm hesitating to say all this because I know how stupid and cliche it sounds, but yeah.
Well, the thing is that you actually did recover from an injury and you actually are making shit happen. So it, yeah, it's more cliche if someone is talking about this stuff than they don't do anything. It's not really cliche if it's the truth.
Sure. Yeah. And I do feel it. Like, it feels authentic and genuine to say. It's just that I feel compelled to make something out of the shit that I went through so that it's not just for nothing. So there is just a little bit, you know, I'm just wired to be that way. And reality is neutral, like you said. And it's just, I'm gonna try to make it into something positive. And that's really all it comes down to. So
that's great. So with that said, because we're running out of time, speaking of positive, like what's coming up that people can check out?
Yeah, I got plenty more music coming out, and there will be some visual component to the subsequent works of mine, but you know, maybe not a Trundle level. But still watch it anyway. but I am really happy musically with the direction things are going in. Just lots of very techie, fun stuff. And hopefully, like, musically captivating, and it's still an experience and not just up its own ass. Trying to, like, find that balance of stimulating and interesting and novel, but still like you can vibe with it, sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to do that. So that's, I guess, what people can expect, kind of. Hopefully I do it well.
Yeah. And if people watching or listening haven't checked out Trundle, if you still don't check it out after everything we've said about it, you're weird. And if you don't like puppies, you're weird.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. There's something's wrong with you if you don't like puppies.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. That's my friendship test.
It's, you know, it's weird.
You like puppies.
So I will say there is one exception. So like my mom grew up in Mexico and her family was just different about dogs than the way we are here. They just didn't see them really as pets, I guess, because of the stray dog problem. It's just a very different cultural thing. So it took her a while after, you know, moving here and living here and then having dogs around. It took her a while to come around. But now she's completely converted.
Absolutely. I will say that unless there's, you know, some instance of trauma or something that's reasonable, then of course you get some grace and a pass for that. But eventually those people come around if they're truly cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
exactly. Well, Alyssa, yeah. Thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure. And the video is awesome. I'm really glad that the injury resolved itself and that you could resolve it without getting cut, and look forward to doing this again.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate everything, your wisdom and your time and all that and advice. So, yeah, I hope people can take something away. Hopefully anybody going through something similar can absolutely find some solace in the fact that it's, you know, possible to be overcome. But, yeah,
especially
thank you so much.
If you stop playing, especially if you rest.
Rest. Everybody just chill.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, man. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.